Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. We're kicking off this week's episode with an interview with Chris Durkin, the 18-year-old holding midfielder for DC United, who is wise beyond his years. He's gotten about 1,000 minutes in Major League Soccer this season already, more than any other teenager except Tyler Adams and Austin Trusty, who are both older than him. And if you watch him play and listen to him talk, you can see why. Durkin is an integral part of Tab Ramos' best-case scenario U20 World Cup qualifying squad. Those qualifiers are in November, and he's become a key part of a DC United squad whose disappointing results do, in my opinion, obscure the fact that they've been playing some pretty appealing football. Greg and I will chat in the second half of the episode, but first, here's my conversation with Durkin, just after the final whistle in France's 1-0 win over Belgium in the World Cup semifinals. Hey, Chris.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Did you watch the game just happen?
Yeah, I did.
Love to hear what you noticed. What'd you see there?
I think a lot of people have said that France isn't at their best and, you know, they're not playing well, but they're in now the finals of the World Cup. So, I mean, I think they're doing the way they play, their speed, the way they move the ball is just awesome. And watching Mbappe, who's 19 years old, it's crazy. And, you know, it's the speed he has and how dynamic he is against players 1v1 is great to watch. And just watching like Conte as well and just seeing how he disrupts the midfield.
I wonder how much you were paying attention to Conte because, man, they couldn't really build anything through the middle past him.
Yeah, I know. Hazard had to be solely on the wings to really get anything done 1v1. And, yeah, Conte just was a hazard in there for them, and they couldn't break it down, as you said. And it's really good to watch, and I thought the game was great.
Yeah, it was a fascinating game, particularly those first 30 minutes when Belgium was looked like they were going to get a goal.
Yeah.
Then France just franced them right out of the game.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for joining me. The podcast is honored to have you. We're big fans.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Let's start with you describing what position you play and your game. I mean, I already know something about that, but just love to hear it from you.
Yeah, I play center defensive mid for DC United, and I would say my game is a disruptor and then a rhythm builder as well, and making sure that I'm cutting off passing lanes and I'm strong in the 1v1 duels and making the number 10's job difficult in terms of creating stuff. And I also think that I give a good link in between the center backs and the attacking portion of the game in terms of just creating a rhythm and breaking lines and staying composed. I'd say that is my game.
Awesome. So you've started 9 games this season, I think. And if you count U.S. Open Cup, gotten more than 1,000 minutes. You're 18 years old. Only 2 other American teenagers have played that much in MLS so far this season. Did you expect to play this much?
Yeah, I'll be honest. My hopes and my goals were not really aligned with getting over, you would say, 1,000 minutes this far into the season with DC United. I imagine, you know, working hard and trying to really compete with Russell Knauss, and I've been fortunate with, you know, with him being injured and him struggling with a knee injury. You know, I wasn't expecting to get that this much minutes, but, you know, I think as a young player, if you're given an opportunity, you really have to take advantage of it and show that you're learning each game, show that you're progressing, and be helpful with the team. And it's definitely been a challenge. It's put me out of my comfort zone for sure, but it's been a really exciting season so far, and I'm really happy with how it's going. And now with Russell coming back as well, it's even better competition amongst the DC United team, and it's great for me and my development.
Yeah, sounds like you have the right attitude for sure. What did you have to do to earn Ben Olsen's trust?
Yeah, it's been a long ride with DC so far. I've been loaned down to Richmond, and I've been with U17s for a while. So I was never really in the picture with Ben until really this preseason. So I felt that I had the quality to really prove to Ben that I'm an asset for him, and that I can be his guy in the midfield. And I think I'm so continually gaining his trust, and I'm constantly asking him questions in terms of what can I do better, how can I help the team more, because I want Ben happy, and I want Ben happy with what I'm doing. And I think that relationship between me and him is constantly growing, and I think it's really important.
So where do you need to get better, do you think? Well,
Yeah, I think.
maybe let me pull that back for a second. Where do you think you've improved the most in the first, 9, 10 matches of the season? And then where do you need to get better?
Yeah, I think what I've improved on is just my confidence in the game. Understanding that I can have a bigger role and be more influential within the 90 minutes. At first I was scared to take chances in terms of how I broke lines and turning and my body positioning. And I think throughout these games that I've played, I've gotten more and more confident. I've received the ball more from the goalkeeper and from the center backs and in tighter areas. And I think it's only helping me become more composed in those situations. And yeah, I've been really happy with how I'm dealing in tight spaces and staying composed. And on the flip side of that, I think I want to continually get the ball more and continue to communicate on the field and become more of a presence vocally, and try and help our 8 and 10 and 9, 7 and 11 more vocal with them, and help shape them defensively, and just help the team a little bit more.
Who are your, I mean, we talked about Conte a little bit right off the top, but who are your models for how to be a good number six? I mean, in the whole
Yeah,
world.
I think my model is it's very reserved. It's not a player who's very flashy, but I think it's what I try and kind of simulate my game after is Matic on Manchester United. I think he is a disruptor, and he's really physical, but also he is very clean on the ball and has a big presence on the field, and that's something that I think I'm trying to work more towards as well. It's just, I think he gives a good platform to look after.
When did you know you were going to be a number six? I mean, was it several years ago, or because you played a little center back with the U17s, and you're fairly versatile.
I'd actually been a attacker when I was younger, on the wings and the striker in that 10 position. I always thought I was more just at that point in my phase, I was really athletic and super fast, and can really go at people one on one. And as I got older and people started to get super fast, then I kind of fell farther and further back. And I think my passion and my physicality and my mentality, I think that's an important part of a six or a center back. And I think that was a good place for me. And my distribution in terms of my range of passing, I think is what landed me there. And my coaches saw that, and that stuff came naturally to me. But the hard part of with the six is just understanding your positioning and your body positioning and all that is really the fine details of the position. And, you know, I think that's been something that has been something that you know, has been difficult to learn. But you know, being put in these matches with the U-17s, with Richmond, with DC United has been so instrumental in me learning. And yeah, I think that was the reason why I kind of became a six. And I think there's still so much more to learn.
Yeah. Let's go really deep in the weeds here. The mechanics of how you play. I notice you're always checking your shoulders, which is probably just a basic requirement of being a number six. But how do you do that? Is that something you had to like drill into yourself to constantly be doing that? Does it come naturally?
I think, you know, checking your shoulder is so vital. You've seen all the videos of, you know, Xavi and Messi and Iniesta and how they clip out all the time. They're looking over the shoulder. And I mean, compared to them, I could be looking over my shoulder so much more. And you know, the reason why they do that and the reason why I do that is just to know, have a 360 vision of what's around you and where the pass needs to go first time or where the pressure is coming from. I think it's so important as a six, or I think wherever on the field, to always understand where the pressure is coming from and where to go. And I think that, you know, it's been pretty difficult to make that a habit, but you know, I've had players around me that have really stressed it, and it's become, you know, kind of ingrained in the back of my mind to constantly, you know, check your shoulder and being in these MLS games where the speed of play is much quicker. You know, I've had it has required me to look over my shoulder even more, and yeah, I think it's very integral in terms of understanding where you are in the field.
How do you think about space when you're off the ball? I mean, is it just simply making yourself available to the center backs and the goalkeeper, or do
Yeah.
you know, and some of this stuff is system dependent, but I'd love to hear you talk
Yeah,
about
for
that.
sure. Yeah, I think space is you can't be, you know, selfish where you're only thinking about where you are or where you want to be on the field. You know, if I wanted to be essentially the whole time, then I could just stand right in the middle. But, you know, that wouldn't be helping my other teammates out in terms of creating passing lanes for them and providing more space for them in the end. So I think space is another thing where, in terms of checking your shoulder, is understanding where the pressure is coming from. And let's say a defender is pressing me, and then backpedaling and alleviating that pressure and opening up space for, let's say, an eight to come into, gives him more space. So, you know, the more space you can make on the field, the wider your team can be. And the more space you have in the midfield, the easier it is to break the pressure. And yeah, I think space is really important in understanding that concept when, you know, you're building out. And that's something I've been happy with DC United and our team. I think our build out has been pretty great over the past couple of games. And I think that has a lot to do with how we manage the space.
Yeah, I agree. My next question was going to start with a statement, which is this. I've watched a lot of your team's games, and you guys are generally pretty watchable. You know, it's there's some rhythm and fluidity to it,
Yeah.
despite the results, which haven't been great yet. You've got a really talented guy playing ahead of you in the midfield, Luciano Acosta. Is it Acosta or Acosta?
I think it's Acosta. It's kind
Acosta.
of however you say it.
Okay. Very clever on the ball, protagonist on the pitch. I mean, he's always looking to attack if I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
You two play different positions, but you interact a lot on the field, passing the ball back and forth to each other. What are you learning from him?
Yeah, he's probably one of the best players I've ever played with in tight spaces. His understanding of how to alleviate the pressure and let's say dribble out of it is amazing. And you know, I've really learned a lot from him in terms of that in that area, in terms of just his composure and his awareness in those situations is pieces that I've tried to take away. And you know, I think he's very dynamic in his movement, and he's always wanting the ball back. So I think as a six as well, it's important to, you know, make that pass, but then your next movement in terms of putting yourself in another spot to receive the ball is important. And I think those are some key things that I've learned from him. And you know, he's a great player, and he's really helping us on the field, and really helping us with the build out. And it's been great playing with him.
Yeah, I bet. I'm gonna switch gears here, unless there's you're so good at talking about the game. Can you think of anything you'd like to discuss, just mechanics wise and how you play? Because I don't want to put a pin in that yet. If you've got something at the tip of your tongue.
Yeah, I think one thing that sticks out to me as well is, you know, the range of passing in terms of when to understand to switch it and when to, you know, play centrally, has been a big kind of learning point for me in terms of when to play centrally and break lines and when to hit it long and, you know, getting behind the line. And I think it's, you know, when I was playing with John Hackworth in U17s, you know, we had such dynamic players on the wing that, you know, it was my job to almost look for those guys in behind and switch the ball wide and find them going 1v1, you know, with Andrew Carlton and Io and you name all those guys, Timothy Weah. I mean, they're a great 1v1. And now with DC United, we have so much talent in the middle. It's now required me to focus centrally more and really break lines through the middle, which has been more difficult because, you know, there's more pressure within the middle of the field. So that's been a challenge for me, but I think it's made me so much better in terms of my thought process and slowing the game down and becoming more composed. I think that's been another great learning point with playing with DC United.
Yeah, because it's a scary thing to play a line breaking pass up the middle, because if it gets picked off, then you know everybody's looking at you saying, well, that was a terrible pass by the 18-year-old, right?
Yeah, for sure. It comes right back down your throat, and everybody's gonna yell at you. So it's not great when it happens and you mess up, but you know, you try and learn from it, and you know, there's gonna be a lot of mistakes that happen along the way.
For sure, yeah. All right, well, switching gears a little bit. You're getting minutes. DC's not playing bad soccer. I mean, it's pretty pleasing soccer, I think, as we discussed. Are you going to settle in for a few years there?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, or as you're saying, I think we're playing really good soccer. I think, you know, the moments in which we create attacking have been awesome. But on the defensive side, I think we have really good defenders. I think it's just the key moments in the matches. And you know, I think that we're really close to getting these wins. And you know, with Audi Field coming, obviously there's even more energy within the team and with Wayne Rooney. But yeah, I think I'm really happy at DC right now. And you know, it's challenging me. I've been really surprised with how great the level is in MLS, and you know, the speed of play and the physicality has really challenged me. And yeah, I think it's going to continue to challenge me, and it's going to continue to make me have a growth mindset and continue to progress and develop. And yeah, I definitely see myself here for a while, and I'm very happy.
Cool. So, I mean, there's a lot of euphemistic ways to get at this question, but I'll just ask it in the very, very plain way. Do you want to play in Europe?
Yeah, for sure. I think every player a spot looks on Champions League, and they look in, you know, they look at the World Cup and see where all those players are playing in Europe. And for sure, it's very, very enticing. And it's definitely a goal of mine to be over there, you know, in the top leagues in the world. And, you know, I think if the opportunity were to arise, it'd be a very, you know, tough decision, you know, leaving my family. But, you know, I think there has to be sacrifices made within the sport to continue to develop. So, it's definitely a goal of mine. But as I said, I'm extremely happy to be in DC United right now and continue to develop with them.
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense. Let me ask a couple more European questions because I think a lot of times it's really simple. It's like, do you want to go to Europe or not? Which is how I ask the question. But it's not that simple, right? It's much more nuanced than that. What kind of, if obviously you're happy at DC United and there's plenty of room to grow there, I get that. But when the time comes where, there are European clubs showing interest, maybe they already are, but really knocking the door down. What kind of situation would you be looking for? Is it, I mean, what's the cutoff? Would you would I imagine you wouldn't jump at a chance to play for a bottom table championship side. That doesn't
Yeah,
make much
I
sense,
think yeah, it's
but.
very. I think as I said, I'm very happy in DC, and the circumstances in with in which DC United has provided me right now have been very, very good for inspiring development and inspiring me to continue to progress. And if I were to go over to Europe, I would have to look at what is put on the table and see. Is what's being provided to me better than what is being provided me at DC United? And I think that, like you said, if a bottom league championship team provides me something, then I don't think that is going to be better than what DC United provides. I think DC United has been awesome in terms of helping me develop. So I think it's like you said, it's not really just a yes or no question. It's there's has to be a lot of key factors that make that decision.
Yeah. How much do you talk with your youth national team teammates about that stuff? I mean, Josh is at Werder Bremen, Timmy's at PSG, Sergino's at De Ajax. Others are headed here and there, rumored to be or reportedly. You've also got a
No,
lot of
yeah,
team. Go ahead, sorry.
I try and keep in touch with all the my previous U17 teammates, and I know that the U20s will help that even more. I'm obviously active on social media, so I'm always seeing what's going on with them, and I think that this is going to be an important year for Timothy Weah and Sargent and all those guys in terms of their preseason and how they do in that. But I think that their path has been great, and I think that in professional soccer and developing, I think every kid's path is different, and I'm extremely happy with how my path has been going so far, and I want to continue to test myself, and I like seeing how other people's paths unfold and. Seeing if it works out or if it fails, and always taking in that information, and that also helps with decisions and all of that.
Okay, I'll quit bugging you about Europe. Let's jump backward and talk about your background. Where did you grow up? How did you get into soccer?
Yeah, I grew up in Glen Allen, Virginia, around 2 hours away from Washington, D.C. I came up through the Richmond Kickers, Richmond Strikers, Richmond United, and then made my way to the DC United Academy. But my dad would play Division One soccer,
Okay.
and yeah, he really pushed me towards the sport, and he really had a love and passion for the game, and he instilled that in me, and instilled that into my brother as well. And I think. He's been my main advocate, and he's been my main supporter in terms of pushing me and always making sure that I'm giving my best and always making sure that I'm thinking of how to develop and how to make myself a better soccer player. So he's been great with that, but also my mom has been awesome in terms of the supporter, and my grandparents and my whole family has really turned into a soccer family. So it's been great, and the whole city of Richmond has turned into a soccer city as well, from Richmond Kickers and all that. It's been a great ride so far.
Can you point to a game or even a moment when it was apparent that you were on track for a career as a professional?
Yeah, I think
Where you were like, I, you know what? I am really good at this, and this is going somewhere.
Yeah, I think that when I came, so I got invited to the U14 national team and then didn't get invited back for a lot of camps, and that really motivated me. I got back into the, and that was now the U15 cycle. And we went to the Italy. We went to Italy, and there was a tournament there. And I became captain of that team. And that really kind of set a bar for me in terms of I worked really hard to get back into the national team. I was super motivated, and then I took that chance, and I worked, and I got back into the. Into the group and became captain and was doing really well, and we won that tournament. And for me, that just told me, if I work hard and if I stay motivated and trust the process and trust everything that's put at me, that, and if I just keep my head down and keep grinding, I think things will work out for me. And so far they have, and I've kept the same mentality throughout the whole thing. And I think that was really a key moment for me, winning that tournament with all my friends, which were a lot from the U17 team, and winning that tournament and being the captain and raising that trophy, it meant a lot to me because there was a lot of hard work behind it.
Who from the U17 side was on that team? I mean, I can look it up, but if you can think of a couple names, that would be great. Was Carlton on there?
Carlton was on there, Jordan Costa, Gosselin, Bud, Nick.
Okay.
There's a bunch of other guys too, I think. Let's see, that's a few man. Io, I think, was there.
Well, sticking with the U, the youth. Youth US team theme. Do you think you'll be able to play in the U20 World Cup qualifiers in November? I know Tab Ramos has gone on record saying, you're a core part of that team if you're available.
I certainly hope I'm available for that. I think that that is again another really important part in my development. And playing, it's always an honor representing our country. And I think we have a lot of exciting players coming up within our youth system. Many that of which you've shown on social media, and there's a lot of quality within the U20 cycle. And to be a part of that, and to be a what Tab has said as an instrumental part of it, would be awesome. And I think that having it in Florida, back in our old stomping grounds at IMG, would be awesome. And if I can be a part of that, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said this on social media before, but I get the my heart rate quickens a little bit when I think about the possibility of you anchoring a midfield with, some combination of Carlton, Richie Ledesma, Alex Mendez, Juliánez, and I don't know whoever they find as a nine, as a striker. I mean, that's more quality, in my
Yeah,
opinion,
for sure.
on the attack than they had in the last U20 World Cup cycle.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of talent.
Obviously you've played with Andrew, but have you trained or played with Ledesma or Mendez or Giannis before? Well, of course, Giannis too.
I've played with Giannis. I've played with Mendez. I've played with Mendez a lot, actually. He's been incorporated throughout the U17 cycle. And Ledesma was, I played against him at the, that giant national team summit where every single age group was there. He was on the U19s, I believe. And we played against him, and then he actually got called up from that camp and stayed a couple extra days and played with the U20s and did really well.
Yeah, he's a fun player to watch.
Yeah, he's very composed and he's a good player.
Who do you think people should not sleep on within the youth national team setup? Anybody? It's a hard question, but anybody come to mind as someone who you're particularly impressed with, who maybe doesn't get a lot of a recognition?
I personally feel, I think Justin Garcia is an extremely good goalkeeper. His feet have grown so much throughout the U17 cycle, and his ability to with reaction saves and is awesome. And I think he's really, really good part of, a team who wants to build out. I think he's great in that aspect. I think he's one of the players that I really like.
Yeah. He's had some really nice performances in USL too the last few months. Would love to hear what you made of the World Cup qualifying failure. What do you think happened? Obviously, you weren't in the room, but what's your analysis?
I think we just got a little bit complacent with how we approached with the games. I think we weren't bringing the passion that our organization has brought in previous qualifiers. And that every game we step in qualifiers is going to be a battle. CONCACAF is not easy. It's going to be a battle. There aren't always going to be the best conditions. But you've got to always bring the mentality. And I think we looked a little bit weak sometimes in terms of how we approached the games. We thought we were better than them. And soccer is a crazy, crazy sport. Where if you're bringing 80% and the other team's bringing 100, it's going to be a good game, even if they're not as good of a team. So I think mentality came down to it a lot. And I think that this failure to qualify, watching the World Cup, it should hurt everybody. It should be something that's burning inside of us. And also, I think it could be a really positive moment in terms of completely, just restructuring how we approach these things. And I think it'll be a reminder of how bad it hurts and to never want to experience it again.
Yeah, well said. So you guys are opening at Audi Field this weekend. How you touched on that briefly earlier, but how excited are you about that? How excited is the team?
Yeah, the whole team is buzzing for it. We've taken a couple of tours through it. We've had a scrimmage on it, and I'll be there tomorrow having another little practice. And the stadium's awesome. I think it makes me want to be a 12-year-old kid in the stands. I mean, amazing view of the field and just watching our team play. I think it's going to be great. And I think that I always wanted the chance or to have a chance to play in RFK, being a kid sitting in those stands. But I think I'll take this stadium over RFK. I think there's a lot of history within that stadium, but I think this stadium is great. It's a very soccer specific stadium in terms of the seating, and you're so up and close to the field. I think it'll be awesome. We're all
Yeah.
super excited.
And last DC United question, Wayne Rooney, have you been training with Rooney already?
Yes.
Have you taken him out?
No, I think he's I don't think in within the first couple of sessions you want to take Wayne Rooney out.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, that'll be cool. Is the team excited about that? Maybe a dumb question, but
Yeah, everybody's excited. I've always been a fan of Wayne Rooney. I used to have posters on my walls of him, and it's been kind of a surreal moment for me training with him, and his professionalism, how he carries himself on and off the field, has been awesome. He's a really good leader, and for me to aspire to be to take my leadership qualities and one day be a captain of a team and professionally, it's really awesome to learn a lot from him, and just being a sponge and taking every little bit of what he does, I think is going to be great, and I'm really excited to see how everything unfolds.
Anything specific you can share that you've picked up from him already?
Yeah, I think his runs are really, really good. They're perfect in terms of his timing and evading space, taking away center backs and finding the ball in behind. He's chipped the keeper a couple times. I mean, he just is pure. He's just world class, and you can tell. And his mentality is awesome, and his physicality, and he's always has the first contact on a center back and gets space away from him. So I mean, he's just a bulldog, and it's great to play with him. And he expects a lot out of us, and it's only going to raise the quality, I think, of our team. And I think he's definitely going to be a really great addition.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how his link up play contributes to the attack. His propensity, at least in the last few years at Manchester United, to drop in deep and
Yeah,
help orchestrate
his
things.
link up play in tight spaces has been awesome. And I think there's been a lot of people saying that he's too old, or even old soul or something like that. But the guy, he's moving, I mean, constantly across the field, and I mean, his quality is awesome. So Wayne Rooney bringing Wayne Rooney to DC United has been nothing but a positive, both for the stadium, for the fans, and even for the team. I think everything is going to fall into place really well.
Okay, man. So, who was your favorite player growing up? Who was your favorite American soccer player growing up? Maybe it was Matic.
No, it wasn't Matic. It was my favorite player was David Beckham. He's just his distribution I thought was incredible, and his free kicks, and like I said, I was more of an attacking player
Yep.
at the time. But he just looked like someone you'd look up to. I mean, he had the hair, and he had the cross field switches and everything. His distribution was awesome, and the cool cleats. I love the guy, and I really looked up to him. And I think my favorite player growing up for the national team was probably, I still think it was Michael Bradley. I think Michael Bradley's quality is really good, and the places he's been, the teams he's played for, I think has been awesome. And looking at where he's gone. And I think he's really good on the ball. He's a really good leader, and he was definitely my favorite player as well.
Yeah, he's in a small class of American players in terms of the clubs he's played at, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, Chris, anything else you wish I was asking about?
No, not really. I think we covered definitely some good topics, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you. Me too. All right, man, thanks a lot.
Awesome. All right, no problem. Thank you.
Take care. Good luck this weekend.
Trap, money, Benny. This shit got me in my feelings. Gotta be real with it. Yep. Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Say you never.
All right, Greg and I are here. We're going to have an extended short corners session focused mostly on Americans on the move this summer. But we're going to start by paying our respects to the greatest show on earth. The World Cup is down to four teams, all of them from UEFA. We've got Belgium versus France, Croatia versus England. By the time most of you listen to this, the Belgium-France game will have been decided. What do you think, Greg? It's been the best World Cup ever, everybody says.
Best World Cup ever, despite the U.S. men's national team's absence. When it was first starting, I think I was referring to this as Euros featuring Panama, and it turned out to be not that far off. Six out of the eight quarterfinalists from Europe, and obviously all four semifinalists, meaning it's pretty likely that the champion will be from Europe.
And that champion will likely be from a partially French-speaking country as well. It seems to me, Belgium and France, the winner of that has to be favored in the final. right?
Yeah, winner, that'll be the clear favorite. And then because it's been this World Cup, who knows if that'll actually mean anything.
Yeah, well, it's exciting to have new faces aside from France. Not really a new face at all at this level of the tournament. But it's exciting that we've got Belgium, Croatia, and England there.
I agree. I don't think it's diminished at all by having all these sort of Cinderella stories. I also do think that for all sort of the upset talk, it was just kind of a fluke in the way the brackets shaped up. Like 2014, you think about the teams that didn't even get out of their group with Portugal, Spain. Who am I missing? Portugal, Spain.
England.
Italy. England, yeah. Portugal, Spain, Italy, England all failed to get out of their group. So they were in, I mean, that was a wild year of sort of failures. This year, the only big team to not get out of the group was Germany, right? Everyone else, I mean, they might have had their drama, but everyone else sort of that was expected to made it. And then just sort of got beat by the upstarts or got beat by another favorite of the tournament. Spain was the only team to really be upset in the knockout round. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. So Portugal, who did Portugal lose to? I forget.
They lost to Uruguay.
Yeah, which was a fair result.
So yeah, so it's been wildly entertaining, but it's just been a strange one in that other than that, Spain lost to the host country, which sort of adds a little, not necessarily an asterisk to the upset, but you see host countries tend to overperform. So I don't know. It's been super entertaining, and it's just been sort of a strange setup in the round of 16 to almost guarantee an unexpected finalist.
Yeah. Who do you like who's left?
So I went into the tournament, you know, as this huge Costa Rica fan and obviously pulling for Mexico. But otherwise I've just been pulling for the most entertaining player. So I've always loved Luka Modric from his days at Spurs. That's when I first started following. So it's awesome seeing him have this level of success. As he's never really been successful in the club game. No, so Modric has been super successful sort of everywhere he's been. And I think he's getting into, like, people are finally recognizing how underrated he's been, even as he's had all the success. So I think that's great. And I really like Lukaku. Love Lukaku and really love the entire French team.
Yeah.
So I'm in a pretty good place here. I work with a lot of English coaches in the youth coaching game. So there's a lot of energy around around England. I don't particularly care if England win it or not.
Do any of those English coaches, you know, sneak up behind you and whisper in your ear, it's coming home.
They never fail to do that. I think on every interaction I've had with them since they got out of their group and saw the round of 16 start to take shape, that's been the chorus.
Well, I hope they lose to Croatia. That's my take on it.
It's not like you really want Croatia to win. You just really don't want England to win. Is that the case?
No, I've been pulling for Croatia to play beautiful soccer the last couple games, and I've been disappointed a little bit. But I've been pulling for them on their side of the bracket. I've sort of fallen into the Belgium camp too, just because I love De Bruyne. I think he's also underrated. Weird to talk about players like Modric and De Bruyne being underrated, given that they maestroed two of the top five clubs in the world. But they are. They just don't seem to get like the recognition that a goal scorer gets.
Yeah, and in a way, like everyone besides Ronaldo and Messi can. I mean, the top players can sort of become underrated just because of the magnifying glass on those two, you know, best players in the history of the game.
Right. But I just love watching Kevin De Bruyne play soccer. He's one of my favorites. And Hazard's not too far behind him. And like you said, Lukaku's fun to watch too. So France, on the other hand, hasn't been. You know, I know they have. There's a lot of excitement about Mbappe. And yeah, world-class players all over the pitch. Pogba, Kante, that center back pairing of Umtiti and Varane. they're awesome, but they're not playing. They're not playing as beautiful soccer as I would like.
They're just getting it done. That's definitely been the rub on France.
All right, well, there you have it. The World Cup finals on Sunday. Any other thoughts?
I'm really hoping that semis and final live up to it. And I'll say I think they will. Like Belgium and England certainly have never been like, all right, well, we're just going to sit back now and try to hold out a lead or anything. Like, they have just been like, all right, the best thing to do with a lead is to try to score more goals. In the past, the semis and final have been really kind of cagey games where it's been very much about don't make mistakes. And so I'm really hoping that this is going to be the most wide open semis and final of our lifetime.
I hope so. I'm not counting on it.
Give me that good stuff. No, seeing as how France will very much be French about it, that they've been in this tournament.
Yeah, it's funny because France was, in 2006 with Zidane, they were just an absolute joy to watch right up until that headbutt. But they don't have Pogba is not Zidane, you know?
Yeah, or they're just not set up to let Pogba sort of do his thing, let Mbappe do his thing.
It's working for him, and I heard somebody say, you know, that's oftentimes the hallmark of a championship-winning team is they just do just enough. They've never looked very much like they were in trouble, and they just keep winning.
Yeah, I think France could end up Leicester City-ing their way to a World Cup trophy here. Everything's sort of been about N'Golo Kanté, and nobody can build against him. No one can even break against him. It seems like that's their recipe for winning. Let him deny everything, and then you have more than enough talent to steal a goal somewhere over the course of 90 minutes.
Yeah. Man, Kanté. He was playing in the second division in France like 4 years ago, or 5 years ago or something. It's crazy. All right, let's move on. The big news in American soccer today is Jesse Marsch to RB Leipzig. He will be an assistant coach, at least in name, for 2 years. The second year of which Julian Nagelsmann, the very highly sought-after Hoffenheim coach, will be taking over. Was that sentence grammatical? It doesn't seem like it in retrospect. But
I'm going to allow it because there are enough names of other languages that it masks any errors.
Nagelsmann will be the coach in 2019-20. Ralf Rangnick, I think is the name, who is the sporting director for RB Leipzig, will be the coach in name in the interim. What do you think of this?
I think it's a sort of a unique enough situation that it's really impossible to say that this is setting him up for something awesome or whether it's sort of a demotion. Yeah, it's open-ended enough that, you know, you could really make either case, and I've definitely seen people making both cases.
Right. I saw somebody argue that it's disrespectful of Marsch to New York Red Bulls and that it was also disrespectful to MLS for him to leave in the middle of the season for a assistant coach's job. I'm not persuaded by that at all, to be honest. I think I'm much more in the "this is a great thing" camp at the moment, although I acknowledge it's open-ended. It's an open-ended situation. I think Marsch is demonstrating that he has a realistic view of where American soccer is in the pecking order and is willing to humble himself and go to Germany for a club that has been quite good for the last few years and learn. And, you know, the word on the street is he's going to be handling a lot of the duties of a head coach under the sporting director's supervision. He just won't be like a lame duck coach with the pressure of that on him. So I like that. I like it on all fronts.
Sure. So I get the thought that he's sort of paying his due, respecting that he might have to pay his dues too. But I also think it shows that he's confident enough in his ability to coach that that I feel like he thinks that he is going to be rewarded for this, or like because he's owed it, but because somebody will decide that he is like he needs to be a head coach somewhere.
Yeah, you're saying he's this isn't necessarily a sign of humility; it's a sign of confidence.
Yeah, yeah. Like you get me in the room, and I'm going to show them that like I belong at the head of a team, and this is the way he's going to show that.
Yeah, I like that.
He belongs in charge somewhere. So I don't know. And again, I don't know if the Red Bull organization would then have a. I mean, they're obviously pretty locked into Nagelman for the next season. I mean, that's they're hoping that that's their next half decade. But I don't know if that means like a shot at in Austria or a move to another club.
Yeah, Austria comes to mind for me. The future is uncertain, which is weird in Germany, where they announce deals 16 months ahead of time. it's funny, like Nagelsmann's going to be the coach, not this coming season, but next season. We all already know that. And
right, they have this whole planned out. So whether your initial impression is that it's good or bad, it seems like Marsh will have the opportunity to advance sort of based on whatever he's capable of doing.
Big old transfer rundown and just give a thought or two on each. Let's start with the big one. We'll do the sort of confirmed strong rumor category. Most of them are actually confirmed.
Yeah.
Bobby Wood to Hanover on loan from Hamburg. Just got announced this morning. Thoughts, Mr. Velasquez?
Well, I mean, the struggles Wood had at Hamburg were no secret, like recognized pretty widely as a disastrous season. Something that I kind of want to go back and touch on is just like with Jozy Altidore at Sunderland and at Hull City, where, just an abysmal statistical season, almost little to no success. Bobby Wood scored 2 goals for Hamburg over, I think, like 1,600 minutes. No one else was scoring for Hamburg either. So it's not like Bobby Wood is just horrendous and then they put someone else in and the goals just started flowing. I think Hamburg's leading Bundesliga scorer had 6 goals. Their next leading scorer had 5, and then they had a couple of guys with 3. Like, they're an anemic side. They were bad. I don't think it's like, oh, well, the forwards just can't score. You have to assume that either there's something wrong with the overall roster construction or the tactics. In addition to potentially not having the most talented players. So Hanover had some goal scorers who were, hitting. I think they have a 15 goal scorer and a 9 goal. So they can score goals as a team. They can score goals. So if Bobby Wood goes to a team that is able to score goals and then he still can't do it, then we'll know that, or we'll have a better idea that he's just not cut out for the Bundesliga.
Right.
That's my Bobby Wood take.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think part of Hamburg's problem was lack of connective tissue in the attacking third, and I think part of that is on Wood, his inability to hold up the ball and find somebody's feet. But your point is well taken. So this is probably Wood's last chance to produce before he goes the way of all flesh and ends up back in MLS. Is that fair to say?
I think we're both hoping that, not even secretly hoping, I think we're both openly hoping that he ends up back in MLS. if only because it'd be a cool experiment to see what a quote-unquote failed Bundesliga striker does immediately upon arrival.
Yeah. It would be a fascinating experiment. And if he doesn't score with some regularity for Hanover, you know, proportional to his minutes on the field, then I think there's a good chance that's what'll happen.
You think that's the route he'd go, or do you think he'd just drop a division or jump across a league? I mean, he's 27. It's not like he's a kid that people are going to start trying to take. You know, no one's going to buy him on speculation, right?
No. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what he would do, but MLS seems like a good place for a national team player to get a payday.
Yeah, for sure. I think Wood probably knows, is savvy enough to know that as a national team regular, he could probably get a little bit over market value for coming back and playing at home. He has a little bit more value on the marketing front for MLS than he would in Bundesliga.
Yeah. Michael Bradley's lawyer is calling me right now saying a little bit more than market value. Did Velasquez just say a little bit?
So yes, I think Bobby would recognize that. And it's I think that's fair. I think Bobby Wood would command quite a bit of I still think there's people who would go out and support him despite the I don't think he's lumped in with the fiasco in Trinidad.
No, he's got goals in him. He could score goals in MLS. I'm pretty confident of that.
Yeah, Bobby Wood has his Bundesliga second life, and we'll see if he makes the most of it. Otherwise, we'll welcome him home with open arms.
Next, Eric Palmer Brown to, I never know how to pronounce this, it's NAC Breda on loan. This is an upgrade for him. Moves from a good Belgian club to a mid-table Dutch club. Looks like a solid rung on the ladder to me for a guy who did nothing to disqualify himself in his two U.S. national team caps.
It's just about, yeah, we just want to see him getting minutes, right? Get minutes, be reliable, hold your own.
Yep. So those are both positive, I would say. Shaq Moore is apparently close to a loan to Spain's second division since he may struggle for minutes at Levante, which he did for most of the last season. The two clubs that have been bandied about are CF Reus and Albacete Balompié. I'm really sorry to anyone who speaks Spanish for those pronunciations.
It's a phonetic language. I think you hit it, Bells.
Good. Perfectly. Those are both bottom half of the table sides. In I don't watch any Spanish second division soccer, but I assume it's a pretty good league. If this means Moore starts every match, you got to imagine this is a good move. Any disagreement?
No, I don't think so. Get minutes. Like, he's 20, play a bunch of minutes. If he's good enough, I'm sure they'll want him back to the first team. If he's not good enough, fine. He'll land probably a permanent deal somewhere else.
Yeah. We're not putting all our hopes on Shaq Moore. He's not on the executive committee, and he is not on the leadership track intern program. Roman Gall to Malmo. Apparently, this is a rumor that he's headed to the top club in Sweden from a less than top club in Sweden. I don't know a lot about this player. But
moving within Sweden, I don't know much about him either, but we'd get to see him a little bit, I think, if they do well in their Champions League qualifiers. Mm-hmm. If he moves to Malmo.
That's right. Yeah. They're playing it. They're in the Champions League qualifiers.
All right. Well, so that's one to keep an eye on. We'll have to add him to our list if he makes that jump.
Yeah.
On Tuesday afternoons.
Right. I added him to the spreadsheet. So add your notes. Chris Richards, who goes by East Mamba on Instagram and Twitter, a big personality of a kid, is on loan to Bayern Munich from FC Dallas. He's 18 years old, plays center back with the US U-20s in their most recent camp in Honduras. You can follow him moment by moment on Instagram, where he is posting a lot of live video. It's mostly boring teenager talking into his phone kind of stuff, but it is actually kind of interesting to hear him talk about his experience there. Apparently at Bayern Munich, they shut off the Wi-Fi at 10 p.m. In the academy dorms, which is genius.
Such a great move.
I need somebody to shut off the Wi-Fi at my house at 10 p.m. So he, you know, looks like he's going to be there till the end of the year. Great chance for him to learn the game at a, you know, one of the best clubs in the world.
Yeah, let's get him on the phone as soon as he gets back from that and find out what he took from the Bayern Munich environment.
Yeah, people on Twitter have asked for this, have asked for us to interview Richard. So, Chris, if you're listening, you'll be getting a phone call from me soon.
Before 10 o'clock, you'll be getting a phone call.
I'll text you before 10. I was very excited to see that Richie Ledesma was trialing at PSV Eindhoven over the weekend. A close follower of the PSV youth system tweeted about it, said he looked technical and responsive. That's what Google Translate gave me for the Dutch word that he used. But we'll have to show that he can add value. Same with another guy who's trialing there. That seems like it'd be a great move for Ledesma.
Yeah, if that pans out, I always like the kids to go play in Holland. I feel like especially if you're if you're going to Ajax or PSV, you're going to get a lot of good attacking experience.
Yeah, he seems like he fits the style of play too.
Yeah, can you think of anybody who would be like, oh, that would not be good for him, other than like Real Salt Lake fans who are eager to try to keep him for themselves?
Yeah, everybody at Real Salt Lake will be bummed, I'm sure, that they lost extremely promising player for nothing. But that is a subject for another day, which we hope to get into. We're working feverishly on it. Anybody who's listening to this podcast probably already knows Ledesma. Just a little background on Ledesma: plays with the US U20s, kind of a core member of that team that's heading into World Cup qualifying in November. Broke onto the scene in the last year or two. Very, very, very good player, in my opinion. And one to watch. What were you going to say?
Oh, just another potential player in sort of that wave of sort of first generation academy kids from the U.S. to that, like, if Europe is on to us, that they're going to try to just take from under our nose for free. Like the European clubs are going to capitalize on this first wave of U.S. talent.
Yeah, it's going to keep happening, right? Okay, the final confirmed transfer that we're going to talk about today, there are probably others that we're thinking of that we aren't thinking of. But it's Akil Watts, former Portland Timbers Academy player, to RCD Mallorca in Spain's second division. Mallorca is partially owned by Steve Nash, Kyle Martino, and Stu Holden. So it's an American owner group. They just got promoted from the third division to the second. Seems like a good spot for a promising American kid. I've seen some of Watts. He's pretty raw. Plays right back, played for the U19s at Slovakia Cup earlier this spring, and didn't look particularly sharp to me. But
if Steve Nash sees something in him, then I'm all about it. That's a kind of a cool background story on Mallorca. Somebody signing for the second division in Spain isn't well, so maybe he'll be up against Shaq Moore in this season.
Yeah. They'll be on opposite ends of the field, but yeah. Now the transfer open questions, the top one is Matt Miazga. His loan at Vitesse ended at season's end. Winning a starting job at his home club, Chelsea, is going to be somewhere between difficult and impossible. Probably impossible, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't see Matt Miazga starting for Chelsea this season.
So if we want him to get regular minutes, he's going to have to get a loan to somewhere else. Probably a better league than the Eredivisie, right? That would be ideal.
Yeah, and definitely, hopefully not in the championship. I just feel like we need to start getting our defenders out of the championship.
Why? This is something that's been brewing for you for a while?
I don't think they're playing 2018 soccer in the championship. I think they're playing 1999 soccer in the championship, and I just feel like our guys need to be getting a bit different style of play than is offered there.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's a brutal television, the championship is. It's bad to watch.
It's like just turning on a random college soccer game, I feel like, a lot of the time. Not to besmirch college soccer in the U.S., but there's some really rough styles of play going on.
Yeah, a lot of lumping it. Lump it here, lump it there.
But yeah, like win the second ball is sort of like the winning mantra.
Yeah. Yeah, second balls are important.
They very much are.
Nowhere more so than in the championship.
I'd rather the first ball go to the person you wanted it to go to.
Yeah, I'm with you. Few kind of just scattered odds and ends here. No news from Sebastian Soto, the youth striker that I'm high on and who was on the podcast a few weeks ago. But the rumors are strong that he'll be headed to Europe before the end of the summer rather than the University of California at Berkeley to pursue his education.
Now I feel bad that I just dumped on college soccer. But is there anyone who's sort of in their thinking of the U.S. men's national team success, hoping that Soto goes to Cal Berkeley rather than a professional team overseas?
I mean, I'm sure his mom wants him to go to college, and if he does go for even like one semester, he gets a scholarship for life.
Okay. So, well, we'll set up a GoFundMe for his education for when he gets back from playing in Holland.
Yeah, he'll be all right, I think.
Go play in Sweden, and I feel like your university is free.
Right, as well as healthcare. But I expect news to drop about him pretty soon here. He turns 18 at the end of July. We'll see what happens. That should be the motto of our podcast. The Scuffed Podcast. We'll see what happens.
It's not far off, Bill.
Nick Taitagwe is training with the Schalke U23s. This can be a death sentence for a professional soccer career, but he's struggled with injuries lately, and the speculation on the internet is that he's just there to get healthy and may get a shot with the first team later in the fall. I still think it's more likely he gets loaned now or in the winter, but who knows? The transfer window is still open.
And you think he'd be heading towards like a two Bundesliga team? I don't know how many. Are there too many loans between Bundesliga sides where Hamburg, not Hamburg because they're not in Bundesliga anymore, but where Wolfsburg take on a Schalke player on loan?
I think there are a fair amount of those.
Okay.
But I don't think Taitagwe rises to that level.
Okay. And you say, and you're calling the U23s the death sentence in the sense that it's sort of just the landing ground for guys who are on contract but are never going to make it?
Yep.
Okay.
That's where Haji Wright is after a very unsuccessful loan to the two Bundesliga last season. And that, to me, indicates – I mean, we don't know – the transfer window is still open, but that to me indicates he isn't wanted anywhere in two Bundesliga, and he's just going to play with the reserves.
Play the reserves so he can move to a Turkish side or a Greek side or a Spanish second division. We'll see what happens.
American side, yeah.
Yeah.
And lastly, Zion Jones is training with the Schalke U19s. There was a photo on Twitter. He's not a player that I rate particularly highly, but he's a winger. He's played with the U20s some, and he's bound to get good training at Schalke under Norbert Elgert, the greatest friend of America in the Ruhr Valley. And he's only 17, so he's got time. He came from Atlanta United.
Okay. All right, so we're just keeping tabs on him.
Yep. Anything else we should discuss?
No, man, I think that covers it. Again, I think you're doing incredibly important work, Bells, while everyone else is focused on the World Cup.
It's not just me. I mean, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people following this stuff, and I'll say the most exciting thing for me is in all of this is that Ledesma is got a trial at PSV. I can't imagine they wouldn't be impressed with him, and I got high hopes.
So maybe that'll be kind of a litmus test too. So if PSV just aren't interested, you know, we know PSV knows talent, you know, and they know particularly this kind of talent, a very technical player. So if they don't see him as being a good prospect, is that going to change? Does that change how you rate him?
Boy. I'm gonna hold on a little more tightly to it than that, to my optimism. You know, if he doesn't get that contract at PSV, maybe he just had a bad day. Maybe they're
stocked up in that position.
Yeah, it'll take a little more than that. I mean, if he comes home from Europe with his tail between his legs completely and no contract and has to go back to MLS. I'm still going to be excited about him, but I guess I'll have to admit maybe I overrated him a little bit. All right, let's close up shop here. The next episode is going to be next week with Joey Anthone. We're going to do a deep dive into the U20 roster. So, looking forward to that.
I bet you're so excited about getting into the U20 roster.
I am. It's my bailiwick.
those are all of your children.
I mean, nothing in U.S. soccer is more exciting to me right now than the prospect of Richie Ledesma, Chris Durkin, Alex Mendez, Andrew Carlton, Yuli Yanez, and Sebastian Soto attacking other U-20s at the World Cup in May next year.
And there's still time to get Efra Alvarez in that group too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just gonna commit harukari if that happens.
Not before the tournament though, Bells. You can't miss that tournament.
No, I won't even want to see it. It'll just be too good. Be too good. Wait, not harukari. It's harikari, right?
Yeah, that's all right, Bells. You got your Spanish pronunciation right. We can't expect you to get your Japanese pronunciation right too.
My Spanish pronunciation was on point. Okay. Thanks, Greg. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you.